a current senior judge to handle ex parte matters, so we're not completely without a law-trained judge, but he will not handle anything that is contested, and he's just part-time. That's Judge Foster, who is retired. We have two JP, or Justice of the Peace systems, in Lake County. Currently, a Southern District, which probably does over 90% of all of the JP work, and a Northern District that handles the balance of the JP work. The Northern District, located in Summer Lake, which is about 77 miles north of Lakeview, has court two times per month, the first and third Saturday, I believe, from at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And when I say that there's no resident law trained judge in Klamath, if you're not familiar with the area, or in Lakeview, and the closest is Klamath, Klamath Falls is 100 miles from Lakeview. Both terms of the existing JPs in the county expire in January of 1991. The practical effect of implementing a district judgeship for Lake County and Klamath County with the resident judge in Lake County is that we would have a law-trained judge who, we're not saying JPs are not fair and not honest, but we would hopefully have more of a technical compliance with the law in the judicial decision-making process. Also, we feel that in a three-day-per-week period, which is what the bill calls for, that the judge shall sit in Lake County at least 3 days a week.
Excuse me.
Yes.
You just really made me mad because you said something critical about JPs. My barber used to be the JP in the town where I worked, and he held court in his dining room, and he had a sign up right there that said, "Jesus never fails." And one time, I hadn't gone to law school yet then. I was still more of a good person. And I went to this trial this time, and this defendant brought a lawyer. And so the JP got the police officer to say why this defendant was guilty and listened to that. And then he says, "Okay, you're guilty." And then turned to the lawyer and said, "Now, you got anything you want to say?" Excuse the digression.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Chairman Frey and Senator Wires, I'd like to comment that I do not and am not critical of JPs. In fact, both of the JPs in the county are friends of mine, and we have good rapport. In fact, when we get to it, you will find that we have an unusual situation and that the JPs of Lake County are in favor of this bill, even though it abolishes their positions.
Don't tell us any more about that.
Furthermore, the practical effect of a district court would allow a higher jurisdictional questions as far as monetary issues to be determined in the lower court than are now determined. A justice court has a maximum jurisdictional power of $2,500 of amount in controversy, where a district court could handle matters up to $10,000 in controversy. Furthermore, as a practical matter, any district judge could also be appointed as a pro tem circuit judge, and therefore the jurisdictional limits would be raised to a general jurisdictional court in both civil and criminal matters, and could really handle everything in Lake County, including the northern portion of the county. It would also curtail the requirement of a Klamath County judge to travel to Lake County twice a month, and they sometimes stay 2 days, sometimes three, sometimes one, but it would curtail that and therefore hopefully improve the judiciary system in Klamath County by allowing them to get through their dockets on a quicker basis. Furthermore, the district court is a court of record, whereby any appeals from the district court could go directly to the Court of Appeals. With the Justice of the Peace system, they're not a court of record, and any appeal would have to be started over. I mean, it would be a de novo or new trial in the circuit court. So hopefully we feel that if there are appeals, and it would avoid starting a complete new trial. As far as the local support for the passage of this bill, the Lake County Bar Association is in support of it. There's only six of us, but we support it very heartily. In fact, I was telling Mr. Nichols when we came up that it's been a long time since I've seen buildings with more than three stories. And we were here in time to have fun. We got to ride the elevators. But the the Klamath County Bar is in favor of it. And the presiding judiciary and the judiciary in Klamath is in favor of it. Judge Abram, a very able judge, has said they would do anything to help us on this bill that they could. The Justice of the Peace of Lake County is in favor of it. There's a letter in the packet from Elizabeth B. Haskins addressed to Senator Timms and Representative Denny Jones from our district supporting this bill. And that's a very unusual situation to have the JP support the bill of this nature. It's also supported by the Lake County Commissioners. You also have a letter to that effect in your packet. And it's supported by the town of Lakeview, who anticipate abolishing the municipal court if this bill passes and sending everything through the district court.
Are the Lakeview capable of paying for the prisoners over there in the jail?
We've had a combined, all the Lakeview prisoners have gone to the county jail for several years now, and I'm not sure what their arrangements are, but they do it. It's my understanding, and I don't know this firsthand, Judge Abram from Klamath Falls told me that it was his understanding that the state court administrator was in favor of it. What we would really ask of you today, and Mr. Nichols will address the financial impact to the state, costs, and so on, but what we would like is that at least get out of committee and let Ways and Means look at it and go from there.
It's always dangerous, I think, but that's a good thought. All right.
I thought he was going to be running.
Mr. Nichols, you thought he was what?
That he would bypass Ways and Means. Mr. Chair, may I ask what the population is in the two counties in Klamath Lake County?
Klamath Lake County together, I would anticipate, is probably 40 to 50,000. Lake County alone is probably under 8,000, probably 7,500, I would anticipate.
8,000?
Yes. It's a very large county in square miles, but in population it is small.
And you currently have how many? Of course, you have JPs, and what do you have currently in Klamath?
Currently in Klamath Falls, there are three circuit judges and two district judges.
Voted down there.
For that population?
Well, I shouldn't say what the population is. That's my understanding. Klamath could be much more than that.
34,000, something like that, and declining rapidly.
And declining rapidly. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
Only a comment.
Go ahead.
Just to share where my vote might be on this bill, we have one judge per 53,000 population in Washington County.
Okay. Senator Cohen.
Can I ask, I know this is a little bit different because what we're doing here is sort of elevating, you know, we're abolishing a justice. I think that's what you're doing. You're wanting to abolish the Justice of Peace Court, or you're not?
Chairman Fry and Senator Cohen, that's correct. There's a Northern Lake County JP abolished and a Southern Lake County Justice of the Peace abolished.
How about in Klamath?
Pardon me.
Sorry, I just jumped in there.
At this time, that is not, quite frankly, it's in the foresight, but it's not part of the bill.
So you're abolishing the JP courts and you're forming a district court. Can the Chief Justice do that without legislation? Because you can't abolish those JP courts and create one without the jurisdiction.
Not without legislation, no.
Because I thought when we went to the state court system that the legislature would no longer be involved in the issue of deciding how many judges – the reason you got so many in Lane County, Mr. Chairman, is because you had some political clout down there that came in with their, down in Ways and Means with all their high agendas each time. And each time the senator, whose name shall be unknown, had it on his high priority. I thought we were going to get away with that, away from that once. But I'm satisfied now to say that you can't do it administratively and that you have to do this piece.
That's my understanding, Senator Cohen. The thing that must be realized by the committee is, among anything else, is our location. We're 100 miles from Klamath Falls, 175 miles from Bend. And Mr. Nichols will get into that, but we need somebody who can make decisions. We have the same problems they have in the cities. I mean, as far as from a legal standpoint.
We better get into that so we can move along here.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mr. Nichols.
Chairman Fry, thank you. My name is Robert F. Nichols, Jr., and I'm Lake County District Attorney, and I'm also Lake County Counsel. And I'll be really brief. I can see you have a full agenda. That's really the bottom line in this. That's what Lake County needs. Many of you are attorneys, and many of you, and I'm sure, or all of you, have dealt with the court system, and you all recognize the important decisions that are being made in our court systems. And in justice of the peaces, those decisions include search warrants, going into people's houses and searching. They're handling motions to suppress. They're having trial evidence. They're making decisions to bind people over on felonies. And they're sentencing people up to a year in the county jail. In the civil matters, they're deciding the same type of issues that they decide in circuit court. The last time the Justice of Peace came down and asked me for some advice, she wanted to know about warranties. And it was a sale of a used car. And to be quite frank, I didn't know the answer. I thought I could have figured it out, but she didn't know it. And that's the type of decisions that we're making. And that's why we need law-trained judges.
Okay, now, come on.
With regard to what Senator Hamby said, I appreciate that very much. And all I can say in response to that is that we're not talking about numbers. We're talking about those bare minimum requirements that I think people are faced are entitled to get. And I appreciate your situation. And the story that Senator Wires said happens much too frequently, and I can tell you it happens in my county, and I'm concerned about it as a public official. I know the cost is a big thing here, and we have a handout here on the Lake. It's from the Lake County audit for fiscal year 1985 and 1986. Essentially, if this committee supported this bill and it went on and passed, the state would be picking up, if you would look on page 73, you'll see that the Southern Justice of the Peace generated $48,000 in the fiscal year 1985 and 1986, which went to Lake County. The majority and probably 90% of that money would now go to the state. That money was generated because, in most instances, because state police officers were involved in traffic violations, and because it was a Justice of the Peace, half the violation went to the county. The only portion of that $48,000 which would not go to the state would be that which was generated as a result of sheriff deputies' arrest. If you look at the next page, which is page 75 on the handout, you'll see that about $5,500 went to the county. And if this bill were to pass, about another, what I would estimate to be 25 to 3,000 would do. In the north end of the county, most of the criminal law enforcement is handled by county sheriff's deputies, and therefore most of that money would still go to the sheriff. And likewise, as Mr. Simpson pointed out, the city has supported this, and they have said that they would abolish their municipal court and put that into the district court, and half of those monies by statute would go to the district court. So while I realize the cost of a judgeship these days is quite expensive, probably $70,000 or $80,000 is my guess, there is going to be money generated, probably $50,000 to $60,000. The one last thing I would like to say is I think this is a relatively cheap judgeship as they go. In our particular situation, we already have the court facilities and the clerical staff available in Lake County. There are already two persons working almost full-time in our circuit court as clerical staff, and those same people with the addition of judge could handle the clerical work that would be necessary in Lake County. When the judge had his responsibilities in Klamath County, again, they already have existing clerical staff over there. And so what I would anticipate the cost of the bill to be would be primarily the salary of the judge. And I realize those don't come cheap these days. I appreciate the opportunity to speak before you, and I know you went out of your way to let us have a hearing. Thank you very much.
Questions? I don't have any.
Would you support the bill if we were to move one of the judges from Klamath over into Lake?
that was my question. Yeah. Yes. Why can't you just expand that existing district?
Mm-hmm. I feel I'm quite sure that we would, provided it was on a frequent enough basis. In other words, we have two circuit judges coming over now. One judge comes over for 2 days a week every 2 weeks, and another judge comes over for what we refer to as our trial week in circuit court. And he comes over and he takes care of whatever trials that we have scheduled in circuit court. They do come on emergency basis occasionally and handle things. In fact, there's one there tomorrow on a special thing for matters that Mr. Simpson and I are going to return and take care of. But what I think the Bar Association wants, and what I feel like the citizens of my county are entitled to, is to have some law-trained decisions made in some of these cases.
May I ask a second brief? Would your judges, current judges, support consolidation, court consolidation?
Meaning, Senator Henry, meaning this question you just asked before, would they support putting their district court over there?
No. Would your judges in Klamath currently be generally supportive of court consolidation?
You mean combining the district and the circuit courts?
Yes.
I don't know the question. You'd have to ask them.
I don't know either.
All right. Any other questions? All right. Okay. This has never been presented to the Oregon State Bar, has it?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
That's all. Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Okay.
Is there an escalator in the house?
Okay.
Is there an escalator?
Doug Haldane, we're going to go to the Council on Court Procedures informational meeting, and I will say this, that that's as far as we're going to get tonight. So we're going to put 756 and 718. And 318 and 490 over.
That's
518. Okay, this will be it for this session. I mean, for today's session. I wish I could say for this session. Yeah,
that's true.
And I know other people have certain obligations. If you want to be excused, you may.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I need to go early since I'm going to leave there at 7:30.
Fine.
Go early and come early.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Douglas Haldane. I'm from Eugene. I serve as Director of the Oregon Council on Court Procedures. Council on Court Procedures is required by Chapter 1 of the Oregon Revised Statutes to report to the Legislative Assembly at the beginning of each legislative session changes that it has promulgated in the Oregon Rules of Civil Procedure. I believe we have had distributed copies of the report of the Council on Court Procedure dated December 13, 1986. And contained therein are the amendments to the Oregon Rules of Civil Procedure, which have been promulgated this biennium by the Council. The enabling legislation in Chapter 1 of the Oregon Revised Statutes provides that unless the Legislative Assembly takes action to the contrary or to amend or modify some action taken by the Council on Court Procedures, the rules or amendments promulgated by the Council will go into effect on January 1 of the year following that legislative session. The enabling legislation essentially establishes a legislative veto on action taken by the Council on Court Procedures. The rule changes promulgated by the Council during this biennium are not that many. Most are not particularly controversial. My plan would be simply to go through them rule by rule as quickly as I can, because I recognize that your time is at a premium, and I would be pleased to respond to any questions that the committee might have. First, the council would amend Rule 1 of the Oregon Rules of Civil Procedure, which is a simple matter of citation form. This was at the request of the Supreme Court, and it simply removes the necessity of placing a period after a section designation in a proper citation to the Oregon Rules of Civil Procedure. It's a very simple amendment of no particular substance and not of any great concern to anyone apparently other than the Supreme Court. The council would amend Rule 9 of the ORCP, which provides for the filing of various papers. The current rule requires that any paper which is served in an action must be filed with the court. There are requirements that notices of deposition and requests for production be served, and thus the requirement is that they are filed with the court. The court has no particular need for a copy of the notice of deposition or the request for production or the response to a request for production, and we're told by the court, the judges and the court staffs, that these papers simply serve to clutter the court file. So we would provide that a request for production, responses thereto, and notices of deposition would no longer have to be filed with the court, although they could be used as exhibits or as evidence if some court action on the request or the notice was necessary. In the event someone sought a protective order or sought to compel discovery, then the notice of deposition or request for production could be attached on that motion. To Rule 16, unfortunately, the comment that is, was prepared in the original report is not complete. We would currently, one may state separate claims for relief in the same action and may all plead alternative theories of recovery within a claim. Currently, good practice is to call those alternative theories of recovery separate counts within a single claim. The rule change would specify that such an alternative theory of recovery would be called a count rather than a claim, and would clarify what is considered now to be good practice. The effect that this would have that is not mentioned in the comment is that the Court of Appeals has apparently tremendous difficulty in cases where there is not an appealable judgment because all claims of all parties have not been resolved. Where a party denominates an alternative theory of recovery as a separate claim, problems are presented then for the Court of Appeals as to whether there is a final appealable judgment, and thus the jurisdiction of the Court of Appeals is called into question. And in my discussions with judges of the Court of Appeals, they have indicated that specifying that these would be considered counts rather than claims would go a long way to clarifying the jurisdictional problems that they have with appealable judgments. Rule 17, or the amendments to Rule 17.
There were two counts, and there had been a final determination on one count but not on the other, then the Court of Appeals could take jurisdiction. But if there were two separate claims and one of them had been determined and the other had, they couldn't? Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wires, if we had two claims which were two legitimately separate claims and there was only a judgment as to one and not the other, the Court of Appeals would not have jurisdiction to hear the appeal. If we were talking about two alternative theories of recovery that were simply mislabeled as claims, then the Court of Appeals may well have jurisdiction in that instance, but it's not clear. And if a party were required to use the count label, then it would be clear that they were alternative theories of recovery, so that recovery or a judgment on one precluded a judgment on the other because they were, in fact, alternative. The amendment to Rule 17 is essentially a complete rewriting of Rule 17. it provides for the signatures on pleadings currently. The new rule is adapted from Federal Rule 11, which would allow the imposition of sanctions any time that a pleading motion or other paper was filed for purposes of harassment, delay, or a needless increase in the cost of litigation. The signature on the pleading would be a certification that that was not the purpose for the filing of the pleading motion or other paper, and a violation of that certification could result in the imposition of sanctions, including all reasonable expenses as well as attorney's fees. This change was the Council on Court Procedure's primary response to concerns about the abuse of discovery procedures, summary judgment procedures, and third-party practice. It was felt by the Council that rather than eliminating those procedures, which was proposed by some individuals and groups, that the imposition of sanctions would go a long way toward curing the abuses and yet allow us to retain those mechanisms when in the instances where they are properly used. The changes proposed by the Council to Rule 39 have to a certain extent or may well be superseded. The House Judiciary Committee has, I understand, given a due pass recommendation to House Bill 2298, which would establish exceptions to the hearsay rule in the evidence code, which would allow the use of perpetuation depositions. The changes to Rule 39, which are in the Council's report, were in anticipation of that legislation and would put in place procedures for taking perpetuation depositions. We were asked to do what the Council felt was essentially amend the hearsay rule and felt that we did not have the jurisdiction to do that and thus declined. Our proposal simply makes reference to the rules of evidence, so admissibility would still be considered under reference to the Oregon Evidence Code. I say this may well be superseded by the House bill if it proceeds through this assembly, because there is some compromise language in that bill that was arrived at between the Bar Committee, which is proposing this legislation, and the Council on Court Procedures. That compromise was arrived at following the production of this report and after its report to this assembly. So we are in agreement essentially with the Bar Committee on the language of that House bill, and if it does pass, it would supersede anything we have reported here. Rule 44 amendment is a very simple amendment. It comes out of Multnomah County. Apparently, rulings from the Multnomah County Circuit Court were that existing chart notes of physicians did not constitute written reports of examinations and were not therefore discoverable under Rule 44C. We have simply added the language or existing notations to make it clear that notes made contemporaneous with an examination would be discoverable under Rule 44C. The proposed amendment to Rule 55, currently under Rule 55, when one subpoenas hospital records, it is possible to inspect those records in the presence of the court clerk, and there is no requirement that notice be given to any party as to when the inspection will take place. So a party subpoenaing records can simply go in and take a look at them anytime they want to without the other side being aware that that is going to take place, and therefore without an opportunity to take any protective action they may wish to take. This amendment would require that that inspection could take place only after reasonable notice had been given to all parties who had appeared in the action of the time and place of the inspection. On Rule 69, this is a somewhat complicated matter. Attorneys for a long time have granted courtesies to other attorneys, including giving notice prior to applying for an order of default, a situation where one is granted an extension of time in which to make an appearance, and then the plaintiff decides it is time for no more extensions to be granted. A notice will go out that unless an appearance is made within a certain period of time, an application for a default order will be made. ORCP 69 for a long time, I think, was read as requiring that notice when a party had appeared or when an attorney who would be seeking such an order knew that the other party was represented by an attorney. The case of Denkers versus Durham Leasing Company, a 1985 Oregon Supreme Court case, analyzed Rule 69 and informed us all that the plain language of the rule is that that notice is only required prior to one making application for judgment, which, of course, is a different step than making application for an order of default. Based upon that, the suggestions were made to the Council on Court Procedures that we require the notice that was customarily given prior to taking an order of default. As we worked through the problem, it became apparent that the rule treats parties represented by attorneys favorably, and there is a disparate treatment between those parties and parties who are not represented by an attorney. And that because of that disparate treatment, the rule probably provides